New York's massive and confusing station, they were met by a large contingent of New York's finest.
Hello, boys. We're going to be your personal escort to the train to Springfield.
Far be it from me to disappoint my fans.
It ain't that we don't respect fellow officers, boys. It's just that your reputations precede you. Especially yours, Mr. Jensen.
Yeah, were it up to me, I would insist you remove those guns.
Smoke stopped. He turned to face the helmeted cop.
And if I refused?
Then I would surely have to use force, laddie.
Lewis and York joined Smoke in a knowing grin.
You have a pencil in your pocket, officer. I can see it. Would you jerk it out as quickly as you can?
The older and more wiser of the cops, and that was just about all of them, backed up, with many of them holding their hands out from their sides, smiles on their faces. A half dozen reporters had gathered around and were scribbling furiously.
So, we're gonna play games, eh, gunfighter?
No. I'm gonna show you how easy it is for a loudmouth to get killed where I come from.
Hey now, what are you-
Easy, friend. I'm just demonstrating. I don't want this to turn into a reenactment. Now draw.
The young officer flushed and placed his thumb and forefinger on the end of the pencil. Smoke swept back his beaded buckskin jacket, exposing his guns. He slipped the hammer thong off his right hand 44. The young officer got exactly half of that pencil out of his pocket before he was looking down the muzzle of Smoke's 44.
Do you get my point, officer?
Indeed I do, sir. As one fellow officer to another, might I say, sir, that you are awfully quick with that weapon.
It was unlike Smoke to play games with weapons, but he felt he just might have saved the young man's life with an object lesson. He held out his hand, and the cop smiled and shook it. The rest of the walk to their car was an easy one, with chatter among men who found they all had something in common after all. It was growing late when they finally detrained in Springfield. They stabled their horses and found a small hotel for the night. The weeks on the road had honed away any city fat that might have been built up on Lewis and had burned his already dark complexion to that of a gypsy. They were all big men, all over 6 feet, with natural, heavy musculature. They were the kind of men that bring out the hostility in a certain type of man, usually the bully. They elected to have their supper in the hotel's dining room to further avoid any trouble. As had been their custom, they wore their guns and to hell with local laws. None of them knew when they might run into Davidson or Daggett or their ilk. Lewis had bought York a couple of suits, and Smoke had brought a suit with him. Longmont was never without a proper change of clothes. If he didn't have one handy, he'd buy one.
Oh, shit. Come on, we got suits on.
That's out of respect for them. They don't always return the favor.
Welcome, gentlemen. Three?
Three, please.
All eyes were on them as they entered the dining room. They walked to their table, led by a very nervous waiter. With their guns tied down low, all three managed to look as out of place as a saddle on a tiger.
May I interest you in our specials? For appetizers, we have a buttered lobster bisque with sage and...
I'll have a steak.
You know, that sounds pretty good. Steak for me, too.
Make that three steaks.
Of course. Three steaks it is.
Sorry we don't have no buffalo here for you range riders.
A drink before ordering, gentlemen?
I'm sure they'll want rye, George. That's what I read that all the cowboys drink. Before they take their semi-yearly bath, that is.
Bull! Oh, Bull, you slay me!
I could move you to another table, gentlemen. That is Bull Everton and his wife.
Is that supposed to mean something to us?
He's quite the bully. He's never been whipped.
That he's admitted. If he can't fight any better than he can choose women, he must have never fought a man. We'll have scotch.
Yes, sir.
The waiter was glad to get the hell away from the scene of what he presumed would soon be disaster.
You take them damn guns off and I'll show you what a real man can do.
Smoke lifted his eyes and surveyed Bull Everton. Even sitting, Smoke could see that the man was massive with heavy shoulders and huge wrists and hands. But that old wildness sprang up within Smoke. Smoke had never liked a bully. He smiled at the scowling hulk.
I'll take them off anytime you're ready, donkey face.
About right now, cowboy. Outside.
Suits me, lard ass. Watch my guns for me.
They're not going anywhere. Mr. Everton, where is this brief contest to take place?
Yeah, brief is right. Out back at a hotel will do.
After you.
The two headed straight for the rear door of the establishment.
All right now. Are you ready to get your... All right. You're dead.
Hey, Smoke. Is fight over yet? Ah, yes. Looking about done.
A small crowd was gathering. Several of the spectators dressed in the blue uniform of police officers. Smoke backed up and allowed the bull to crawl to his feet. There was a light of fury and panic in the man's eyes. Bull lifted his hands in the classic boxer's stance, left fist held almost straight out, right fist close to his jaw. Smoke kicked him right in the knee. One of the cops watching walked up to the scene.
I'm a U.S. Marshal officer. This man was...
I know who Bull Everton is, and I know anything you've done to him was well deserved. All right, drag the bull to the paddy wagons, boys. Take him to the hospital. I can tell by looking that his jaw's broken, and I'll wager half a dozen ribs are broken as well. You don't even look angry, young man.
I'm not.
Lord, suffer us all. What would you have done had you been angry?
Killed him.
I'd like to not get on the wrong side of the road with you, young man. But I do thank you for giving that man what's been coming to him.
Lewis handed Smoke a towel and held his coat while his friend wiped his face and hands. York had stood to one side as coat brushed back, freeing the butts of his .44s. And the cops had noticed that, too. The cop looked at all three of the men.
You boys are here for a reason. I'm not asking why, for you're officers of the law, and federal officers at that. But I'd not like to see any trouble in this town.
There won't be. We'll be leaving at first light.
Gentlemen, I've freshened your drinks. The management has instructed me to tell you that your dinners are on the house this evening.
That won't be necessary, I assure you. We have ample funds.
Gentlemen, Bull Everton will not be returning to this establishment for quite some time, thanks to you. And if that isn't worth a free meal to get rid of a big pain in the ass, nothing is.
The men were in the saddle and moving out before first light the next day. It was cold, with more than a hint of fall in the air, and a beautiful day for traveling. The road followed the Connecticut River. The men stayed on the east side of the river, knowing they would have to veer off toward the northeast once inside New Hampshire. All were taken in by the beauty of the state. Although the leaves were turning as fall approached, the lushness of nature was a beautiful thing to see. As they traveled, the road was bordered by red spruce, red oak, white pine, sugar maple, yellow birch, and white birch. Stone fences surrounded neat fields and farms.
It's sure puny. I can't rightly describe the way I feel about this place. It's, well...
civilized.
Yeah, I reckon that's it, Lewis. The only gun I've seen all day is the ones we're toting. Gives me sort of funny feeling.
Bear in mind that all that will change with the arrival of Davidson and his thugs.
By mid-afternoon, the school's out for the day. Boys and girls began to appear by the fences and the roadways, staring in mute fascination as the cowboys rode slowly by. Smoke and Lewis and York all smiled and waved at the young people. And just to give the kids something to talk about and remember, they swept back their jackets, exposing the butts of their guns for the kids' wide eyes. After spending the night at an inn on the state line, the trio crossed into New Hampshire at first light. York was dressed in jeans, a red and white checkered shirt, and a leather waist-length jacket. Lewis dressed in a dark suit, a white shirt with black string tie, highly polished black boots, and a white duster over his clothing to keep away the dust. Smoke was dressed in dark jeans, a black shirt, a red bandana, and his beaded buckskin jacket. All wore Western hats. Only York and Smoke's big bowie knives could be seen. Lewis's duster covered his own knife. About 25 miles into the state, the outskirts of town came into view.
Here we are, boys. Keene, New Hampshire.
The men reined up, dismounted, and knocked the dust from their clothing. Lewis, loving every minute of it, removed his linen duster and tied it behind his saddle. A farmer came rattling along in a wagon.
Howdy. We're looking for the Reynolds house. How do we find it? Sir, are you all right?
Good God, it's really you. I've been reading about you for years. I knew you by your picture.
Thank you. I'm glad to meet you, too. Could you direct us to the Reynolds house?
Oh, sure. That's easy. Cross the bridge and go 3 blocks. Turn right. 2 blocks down. There's a big white two-story house on the corner. Can't miss it. Ho-ho! Wait till I tell my wife I seen Smoke Jensen.
What day is this? I'm having the damnedest time keeping track of things.
Saturday. Smoke, do we inform the local authorities as to why we are here?
I think not. If we did, they'd want to handle it the legal way, with trials and lawyers and as such. We'd be tied up here for months. So let's keep it close to the vest and wait until Davidson makes his play. Then we'll handle it our way.
They cantered across the wooden bridge, 3 big men riding big Western horses. They slowed to a walk on the other side of the street. People began coming out of the houses to stand and gawk at the men as they rode slowly by. Little kids stood open-mouthed. For all of them, it was the first time they had even seen a real Western cowboy, much less 3 real gunslingers like they'd been reading about in the penny dreadfuls and the tabloids. A little boy spotted them as they turned the street corner, and he took off like the hounds of hell were nipping at his feet.
Aunt Sally! Aunt Sally! They're here, Aunt Sally!
He ran up the steps of the huge house and darted inside. The front porch filled with people, all staring at the 3 horsemen walking their mounts slowly up the street.
Your relative, Smoke. Looks like quite a gathering.
I am not looking forward to this, Lewis. I just want to get this over with. See Davidson and his bunch dead in the streets, and take Sally and the babies and get the hell back to Sugarloaf.
You'll survive it, I assure you, my friend. But I feel it will be somewhat trying for the lot of us.
Sally stepped out onto the porch to join her family. Smoke felt he had never seen anything so beautiful in all his life. She stood by an older man that Smoke guessed was her father. The entire neighborhood had left their houses now and were standing in their front yards, gawking at the gunslingers.
See? It's Smoke Jensen. He's killed 1,000 men with those guns. Then he took that coat off an Indian after he killed him.
I feel awed to be in the presence of someone so famous. 1,000 men, eh? My, how your reputation has grown in such a short time.
Smoke shook his head and couldn't help but smile. On the porch, John Reynolds paled.
That horse he's riding looks like it came straight out of the pits of hell.
That's Drifter. He's a killer horse. Killed the last man who tried to own him.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes. But he's really quite gentle once he gets to know you. I was baking pies one afternoon, and he stuck his head into the kitchen and ate a whole pie before I realized it. I picked up a broom and spanked him.
You spanked him?
That I did.
The riders dismounted and reined up. Sally stepped off the porch and walked toward the picket fence, a smile on her lips. Smoke stood by the gate and stared at her, not trusting his voice to speak.
You've lost weight.
I've been missing your cooking.
Smoke opened the gate.
Is that all you've been missing?
Well, let's see. I reckon I might have missed you just a tad.
Oh, Smoke! Oh!
And then she was in his arms, loving the strong feel of him. Her tears wet his face as she lifted her lips to his.
Should you be out of bed this soon?
Oh, the doctors tried to get me to stay in bed much longer. But since I didn't have the time to get to the city to have the babies, and they came so easily, I left the bed much earlier than most, I imagine.
I keep forgetting how tough you are.
Smoke smiled at the twin cradles in the room.
Have you thought about names, Smoke?
No, I really haven't. I figured you'd had them named by now.
I've thought of a couple.
Oh?
How about Louis Arthur and Denise Nicole?
Louis for Louis Longmont. Arthur for Old Preacher. Nicole for Smoke's first wife, who was murdered by outlaws, and their baby son, Arthur, who was also killed. Denise was an old family name on the Reynolds side.
You don't object to naming the girl after Nicole?
No, you know I don't.
Louis will be pleased.
I thought so.
Are they ever going to wake up?
Don't worry. You'll know when they wake up. Come on, let's go back and join the rest of the family.
Smoke looked around for Louis and York. John Reynolds caught his eye.
I tried to get them to stay. I insisted, told them we had plenty of room, but Mr. Longmont said he felt it would be best if they stayed at the local hotel. Did we offend them, son?
No. We're here on some business as well as to get Sally. It would be best if we split up. I'll explain.
Oh, I was so afraid we had somehow inadvertently offended Mr. Longmont.
Don't worry about it, John. Louis just wanted to find a good poker game, that's all.
After lunch, the family sat on the front porch. Smoke had not removed his guns and had no intention of doing so. And it was not just the young people who stared at him with a sort of morbid fascination.
Tell me about Dead River.
Sally glanced at her nieces and nephews.
You, Scoot. There'll be lots of times to talk to your Uncle Smoke.
The kids reluctantly left the porch. Smoke shaped and rolled and licked and lit.
Got kind of antsy there for the last day or two before we opened the dance.
You went to a dance?
Opening the dance means I started the lead flying, Betsy.
Oh.
You mean as soon as you told the hooligans to surrender, they opened fire?
No, it means that me and York came in the back way of the saloon, hauled iron and put about half a dozen of them on the floor before the others knew what was happening.
We don't operate that way in the East.
I reckon not. But the only thing Dead River was east of was hell. And anybody who thinks they can put out the fires of hell with kindness and conversation is a damn fool. And fools don't last long in the wilderness.
John Reynolds stepped in before his son found himself knocked on his butt out in the front yard.
A young lady named Martha will be along presently. She has some foolish notion of traveling back west with you and Sally. She wants to teach school out there.
Fine with me. Sally, has she got the sand and the grit to make it out there?
Yes, I believe she does.
Tell her to start packing.
But don't you have to get the permission of the school board?
Ain't got none. Don't know what that is anyways.
Sally smiled, knowing Smoke was deliberately using bad grammar. And cutting her eyes to her mother, she knew that Abigail knew it too. But her father appeared lost as a goose, and so did her brothers.
Well, sir, a school board is a body of officials who gather...
Sit around and cackle like a bunch of laying hens and don't accomplish a damn thing that's good for the kids.
Abigail smiled and minutely nodded her head in agreement.
Well,
are you a lawyer?
Why, yes, I am.
Thought so.
Do I detect a note of disapproval in your voice, son?
Might be some in there. I had never found much use for lawyers. The ones I knowed, for the most part, just wasn't real nice people.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
I reckon I might. A man chooses a life of crime. He does that deliberate. It's his choice. Hell with it. You ladies pardon my language. On the other side of the coin, a man breaks into another man's house and starts stealing things. The homeowner shoots him dead. And there'll be those in your profession who will want to put the property owner in jail. It doesn't make any sense. And now, so I read in here, You folks are beginning to say that some criminals were driven to it, and the courts ought to take into consideration how poor they were. Poor. I was a man, grown at 13, doing a man's work and going to school and looking after my sick mother, all at once. My dad was off fighting in the war, for the Gray. Not that he believed in slaves, because he didn't. War wasn't fought over slaves anyway. We didn't have any money. Tied the soles of our shoes on with rawhide. Ate rabbit stew with wild onions for flavor. Shot them when we had the ammunition. Trapped them and chunked rocks at them when we didn't. Or didn't eat at all. But I never stole a thing in my life. Some of our neighbors had more than they needed. But I didn't envy them for it. And if I caught myself coveting what they had, I felt ashamed. You've all got a big fine house here, and I expect you all have lots of money. But how many times have you turned a beggar man away from your back door without giving him a bite to eat? That doesn't happen often out where Sally and I live. If that man is able, we hand him an axe and tell him to chop some wood. Then we'll feed him. If he isn't able, we'll feed him anyway and see to his needs. There isn't any reason to talk any more about it. You know what I'm talking about. But if I find somebody trying to steal from me, I'm going to shoot him dead. Now, I think I'm going to take a ride around your pretty town. John, we'll talk some more after supper.
I like your man Smoke, Sally. I didn't think I would, but I do. He is a man of conviction.
And is more than willing to back up those convictions, Father.
Yes, I just bet he is.
That's the way it shapes up, John.
The men were in the study now, the door closed. Sally was the only woman present. Her brothers had not been included in the discussion. It was after dinner, and the men had smoked their cigars and had their brandy already. John looked at York. The young Arizona Ranger met his gaze without flinching. He then looked at Lewis Longmont. The man was handling a rare book from John's library, obviously enjoying and appreciating the feel of the fine leather. And there was no doubt in John's mind that that gambler had probably already read it.
Of course you are going to inform our local police department of these.
No.
But you must.
No, I must not. I don't want these men tried in some damn Eastern court of law and have them serve 5 to 10 years and then walk scot-free. And you know far better than I. That's exactly what would happen, John.
But I'm sure the sheriff and the chief of police are curious as to why you're here. 3 U.S. Marshals from the West. They're going to ask.
I'll just tell them I came to town to see my wife's family.
But why are you staying so long?
I'm just waiting for the babies to get big enough to travel.
And what about Misters York and Longmont? Do you think they'll believe that they're here just to keep you company?
You think either one is going to want to call me a liar?
I very highly doubt it.
Then that's my story.
So what do you propose to do, son?
I propose to notify your local police when we see them ride into town. Lewis has alerted people along the way, people who work both sides of the law. Davidson is not going to ride all the way here from Colorado. Neither is Bothwell or Rycroft or Brood or any of the others. They'll be coming in on trains, one by one, and pick up horses as close to here as possible. I got a hunch they're going to try and tree this town.
Tree?
Hold it hostage. You can't do that to a western town. Folks there would shoot you so full of holes your mother wouldn't recognize you. But an eastern town is different. You don't have a loaded gun in this house, and damn few others do either. But I'm about to correct that little problem.
How?
I gave York some money this afternoon. He rode over to Brattleboro and picked up some weapons.
You are going to arm the boys and me?
No, I'm going to arm Sally.
York? Sally?
John, have you ever killed a man?
What? Why, no.
Any of your sons ever used a gun in anger?
No.
That's why I'm not arming you, John. It isn't that we don't believe you're 100% man. It's just that you'd be out of your element. You and 90% of the people in this town. Oh, a lot of men in this town fought in the war between the states and were heroes, I'm sure. But that was war, John. I'd be very surprised if one of them could ambush a man and shoot him in cold blood.
Yes, So would I.
There you have it, Mr. Reynolds. You'd be thinking about them being human beings and all that. Well, these people ain't worth a cup of puke.
How quaintly put. And you have other officers coming in to assist you, right?
What for?
Well, how many outlaws will there be?
Probably 20 or so. We'll handle it.
20 or... Are you serious?
Hell, Mr. Reynolds, that ain't but 6 or 7 apiece. I recall the time down near the Painted Rock, me and 2 other guys fought off 100 or more Apaches. Killed about 40 of them.
But those were savages.
Believe you me, John. Davidson and his bunch are just as savage as any Apache that ever lived.
John, these men tortured and killed men just for the fun of it. You no doubt saw the pictures in the papers.
I saw a number of bodies, yes. But those were all shot.
A couple of marshals had taken down the slaves and people on the outskirts of town before the press got there.
Taken down? What do you mean?
They hung people on stakes, John. Lashed them to wood and in some cases had them hanging from holes the outlaws made in them. They would die slow, John. Baking in the sun. Flies laying eggs in their bodies while they were still alive. Men. Women. Children.
I'll start cleaning my shotguns and my rifle.
The nights were cool and the days were pleasantly warm as autumn slipped into the northeast. Smoke, for the most part, stayed close to the Reynolds house. York and Lewis spent their days riding around the countryside, ranging from the Vermont line to the west, up to Claremont to the north, over to Manchester to the east, and down to the state line to the south. There was no sign of Davidson or any of his men, and Smoke began to wonder if he had figured wrong. But there was still that nagging suspicion in his guts that the outlaws were on their way and that they would make their move before the first snow. And the first possible snow would probably come around the middle of November. The twins were growing fast. They were fat and healthy babies who laughed and gurgled and hollered and bawled and messed their diapers. A lot of the latter. It was fascinating to John to watch the gunslinger with the big rough hands handle the babies with such gentleness. And the twins responded to the firm gentleness, apparently loving the touch of the big, rough-looking man who, or so it seemed to John Reynolds, never took off his guns. For exercise, Smoke took a wagon out into the timber and spent the better part of several days chopping wood. He chopped enough wood to last the Reynolds family most of the winter, and he stacked it neatly. On one cool and crisp afternoon in November, Lewis rode over and chatted with Smoke, who was currying Drifter. York lounged nearby, the thongs off the hammers of his .44s. Only Smoke and Sally noticed that.
4 of them left St. Louis a week ago. My men were certain that one of them was Davidson. They bought tickets for Boston. 6 hard-looking Western men pulled out of New York City day before yesterday after buying some fine horse flesh. Some others pulled into Pittsburgh on the river more than a month ago, bought supplies and horses, and left within a week. Still another group rode the cars from Nebraska to St. Louis, bought horses, and left weeks ago. It's taken my people some time to put all this together.
Lewis's people, Smoke had learned, included not only foot patters and whores, but paid members of the Pinkertons.
So we can look for them by the end of the week. But Davidson is too smart to come riding into town in a gang, shooting the place up. From what you said, I gather we'll be looking at 20 to 25 men.
At least. I'd guess close to 30.
Smoke was silent for a moment, trying to recall a news article he'd read several weeks back. Then it came to him.
There was an army depot robbed down in Maryland several weeks back. Did either of you read that article?
Yes, I did. Uniforms and military equipment taken. Smoke, do you think...
Yes. Yes, I do. That would probably be the group who left St. Louis weeks ago. Let's play it that way. I sure wish we had Jim Wilde and a few of the boys up here with us.
Yes, that would be nice. But it's too late to get them here. Do we still play it close to the vest?
Lewis, I've been thinking about that. I can't put these people's lives in danger. They've got a right to know what and who is about to enter this area. As bad as I hate to do it, when the so-called army patrol is sighted, I'm going to level with the sheriff and the chief of police.
And Mr. Reynolds?
I'll do that as soon as he comes in from the office. John, where's the nearest military unit based?
New York State, I'm sure. Why?
They're coming.
Are you sure?
We just got word. They're coming on different trains. They'll be joining up just south of here.
I'm glad you decided to confide in me, son. I felt that you would, after further thought, take the lives of the people of this community under deeper consideration.
I'm glad you see it that way. Could you get in touch with the New York military?
Well, we have a fine militia here in New Hampshire. I'll get right on it the first thing in the morning. I'll wire the governor, and he'll see to it immediately.
John did not see the look that passed between the three gunfighters.
How long is this going to take, sir?
Oh, several days, I'm sure. The governor has to sign the orders mobilizing the unit, then the men have to be notified and moved into place.
I'm sorry, but no.
No? What is it, son?
We don't have time, John. Not for all that. Can you contact the governor tonight and have him notify the army?
Why, certainly. And tell the army what?
Of our suspicions.
I'll get a wire off immediately. I'll handle this part of it, son. Be back in half an hour.
John headed off in his buggy. When he returned, his face was long.
The governor is taking an early Thanksgiving vacation.
What? It's October!
A very early Thanksgiving vacation. I sent a wire to the commanding officer of the army post over in New York State. He's in Washington, D.C. for some sort of hearings. Son, we appear to be hitting a stone wall every way we turn in this matter.
I got a bad feeling about this thing. I got a feeling it's all gonna break loose on us tomorrow.
And those are my sentiments as well. What is your opinion of the sheriff and the chief of police, John?
Oh, they're good men, but with only a small force behind them.
I checked on the cops in the town and country while you were with the baby, Smoke. There's 5 men, good, stable men. But not gunfighters.
We'll see them first thing in the morning.
I've packed my things. I'll stay here with your permission, John.
Of course, of course. I insist that the both of you stay. Mr. York?
I'd be happy to.
Then we'll see the sheriff and the chief first thing in the morning.
I don't see why you couldn't have leveled with us first thing, Marshal.
Because by doing that, you would have alerted the militia and the army and deputized every man in the county. And that would have scared them off.
And that would have been a bad thing?
In a way, yes. They would have just laid back and hit you when you stood the men down and sent them home. How many men can you muster? Good men, Sheriff.
Jensen, we don't have gunfighters in this town. We have shopkeepers and school teachers and farmers and small businessmen. And a nice fat bank.
How fat?
Very fat, Mr. Longmont. And need I remind you that today is the last day of the month?
Payday for most working people. The bank would have pulled in more money to meet the demand.
They planned it well. How well do the people listen to you, Sheriff?
Why, I don't know what you mean. They elected me.
What I mean is, if you told them to stay off the streets today, would they heed your words?
I feel certain they would.
A flustered-looking station master burst in. Chief of Police Harrison looked at him.
What's the matter, Bob?
I can't get a wire out in any direction, Harrison. My unit is dead as a hammer.
That's it. They're planning on using the train to get away. Remember all the horses I was told they'd bought, Smoke? They've stashed them along the railway, and they'll ride the train north to their horses.
What? What's going on?
And the uniforms they stole weren't meant to be used here. They'll be used as a getaway after they've ridden the train north. And it will be north. When they get close to the Canadian line, they'll peel out of those uniforms and ride across as civilians, after splitting up.
The mayor, Keene, had stepped in while Lewis was talking.
What's all this, Bob?
Yes, Mayor?
I'm trying to get a wire out to my sister in Hanover. Old Sully tells me the wires are down. Next thing, I see you dashing for the sheriff's office. Now, what's going on here?
Sheriff Poley pointed at his lone deputy on duty that day.
Peter! Get the men and women and kids off the streets. Arm the men.
I demand to know what's going on around here.
Hold on, Deputy Peter. Sheriff, you're going to get a bunch of good men hurt or killed.
Now, what the hell do you mean by that, Marshal?
This is New Hampshire, Sheriff, not Northfield, Minnesota. When is the last time any man in this town fired a gun in anger?
God
damn it! Somebody tell me what the hell's going on around here!
Oh, shut up!
The mayor's mouth dropped open in shock. Nobody had ever talked to him in such a manner.
Well, I'd guess the Civil War, Marshal.
That's what I mean. 10 men, Sheriff. That's all I want. 10 good, solid men. Outdoorsmen, if possible. You know any?
Yeah.
I can think of some.
Good. Get them. And tell them to arm themselves as heavily as possible and be down here in 1 hour. Now, it's 8:30. When's the next train come in?
2 passengers today, Marshal. Northbound's due in at 11 o'clock.
They'll hit the bank about 10:45 then.
That's the way I see it. But when will they hit the Reynolds house? Before or after?
Farmer Jennings Miller and his wife had left the day before to visit the oldest daughter over in Milford. That move saved their lives, for the Miller farm was the one that had been chosen by Daggett for a hideout until it was time to strike. The outlaws had moved in during the last 2 nights, riding in by ones and twos, stabling their horses in the Miller's huge barn. The outlaws had been hitting banks on their way west and had amassed a goodly sum of money. This was to be their last bank job before moving into Canada to lay low for as long as need be. And Davidson was paying them all extra for this job, and paying them well. The bank was only secondary. The primary target was Sally Jensen and the babies. Studs Woodenhouse had 3 men with him. Ty Medley had 4 from his original gang left. Paul Rycroft had brought 2 men with him. Slim Bothwell had 3. Then there was Shorty, Jake and Red, Bruce Pittman, Tustin, LaHogue, Glenn Moore, Lapeer, Daggett, and Rex Davidson. 26 men in all, with over $100,000 in reward money laying on their heads. All were wanted for multiple murders, at least. The outlaws had nothing at all to lose.
Let's start getting the saddles on the horses. 1 damn mile from the center of town, nobody ever thought to look here. It was a good plan, Daggett.
All I want is a shot at that damn John Reynolds. I want to gut shoot that fancy-talking lawyer so it'll take him a long time to die.
Be any kids in Reynolds' house? Say, 10 or 11 years old?
No one answered the man. He was a long soldier because of his ability to use a gun and his nerves of steel. Other than that, no one had any use at all for Brute Pittman. Not even his horse liked him. The outlaws began a final check of their guns.
Now you all know how this is gonna happen. We come in hard. I want the streets to run red with blood. Men, women, children, it don't make a damn bit of difference to me. Now this is what happens when you cross Rex Davidson. Now you all get the rest of the gold when we get to Canada. Now I know you'd all like some coffee or breakfast, but we can't risk smoke being seen from the chimney. Just think of it like this. You'll all get coffee on the train, and probably some pretty women, too.
All right.
And maybe some kids.
The outlaw seated next to Brute got up and moved away. The 10 men were good men. Not gunfighters, but good, solid, dependable men. Their weapons were not what Smoke would have chosen for his own use, but they seemed right in the hands of local citizens. Their pistols were worn high in flap holsters, but they wouldn't be called upon to do any fast draw work. Smoke looked outside. The streets of the town were empty. The store owners had locked their doors but left the shades up to give the impression that all was well.
All right. You men are going to protect the bank and other buildings along Main Street. When you get the bastards in gun sights, pull the damn trigger. We don't have time to be nice about it. You're all veterans of the army. You've all seen combat. This is war, and the outlaws are the enemy. The sheriff has deputized you, and I've given you federal commissions. You're protected both ways. Now get into the positions the sheriff has assigned you and stay put. Good luck.
The men filed out and began taking up positions. Some were hidden behind barrels and packing crates and alley openings. Others were on the second floor of buildings on both sides of the street. The sheriff and his deputy, the chief of police, and his one man on duty armed themselves and took their positions. Smoke, Lewis, and York would soon begin a slow sweep of the town on horseback.
The babies are in the basement next to the fire with Mom. What can Walter and I do?
Don't get in the way.
John Reynolds loaded two more shotguns and then a lever-action rifle. He checked the loads and the pistols Smoke had given him. Jordan peered out the window.
Oh! Who is that man running across the street towards us?
What? Let me see. Oh, that isn't a man, son. That's Martha in men's jeans.
Good Lord, Father! That's indecent.
That's not exactly the way I'd describe the last boy. Open the door. Let her in.
Thanks.
Come on in, Martha. Sally has gotten the back door, Martha. She is also in men's breeches.
Yes. We bought them at the same time. I'll go join her.
Martha walked to the back of the house, a Smith & Wesson Pocket 32 in her right hand. Sally was sitting by the rear window. She had a rifle and a shotgun leaning up against the wall and a six-gun belted around her waist.
My goodness. Can you really shoot all those guns?
Can and have, many times. If you're moving west, you'd better learn how.
I think today is going to be a good day for that.
The Indians have a saying, Martha. It's a good day to die. I'll be right back. I just want to go check on my father. Father?
Yes, my darling?
Where are Jordan and Walter?
Well, I took one look at them holding shotguns, and I told them it would please their mother to guard the basement.
That bad, huh?
Indeed.
Well, you look tough as a gunslinger, Father.
I feel like an idiot. But I do think I am capable of defending this house and all in it against thugs and hooligans.
There isn't a doubt in my mind about that, Father. Don't leave your post. I'll handle the back.
All right, sweetheart. Be careful now.
I will, Father. Now don't let them get on the porch. When you get them in gun sights, let her bang.
Let her bang, yes. I shall surely endeavor to do that.
Smoke rode alone to the edge of town, and the huge barn to the southeast caught his eyes. There was no smoke coming from the chimney of the house, and the day was cool enough for a fire. He wondered about that, then put it out of his mind. He turned Drifter's head and rode slowly back to town. The town appeared deserted, but he knew that behind the closed doors and shuttered windows of the homes, men and women and kids were waiting and watching. And the people of the town were taking the news of the outlaws' arrival calmly, obeying the sheriff's orders without question. Smoke, York, and Lewis, all in the saddle, met in the center of town.
What's the time, Lewis?
10:15, and not a creature is stirring.
Unless they're hiding awful close. They're gonna have to make their first move damn quick.
Oh, they're close. Maybe no more than a mile or two outside of town. I've been thinking, boys. Jim Wilde told me that those ledger books of Davidson's showed him to be a very rich man. Money in all sorts of banks. In different banks under different names, Jim guessed. The assumed names weren't shown. So why would he be interested in knocking off a bank? It doesn't make any sense to me.
You think the primary target is Sally and the babies?
Yeah, and something else. John Reynolds told me that Daggett has hated the Reynolds family for years, even before he got into trouble and had to leave.
So John and Abigail might also be targets.
Yeah.
This Daggett, he have any family still living in town?
I don't know, but I bet he does.
Daggett would still know the town.
Yeah, and he would know where the best hiding places were.
And he just might have supporters still living here.
There is that, too.
Smoke, we'll take the main street. You best head on over toward the Reynolds place.
Right. Appreciate it. See you, boys.
Smoke put Drifter in the stable behind the house, but left the saddle on him. He pulled his rifle from the boot, then walked around the big house on the corner. The house directly across the street on the adjacent corner was empty. The home facing the front porch was occupied. To the rear and the left of the Reynolds house, looking from the street, the lots were owned by John. In the summers, neat patches of flowers were grown by Abigail. Smoke stood on the front porch, the leather hammer thongs off his .44s, the Henry repeating rifle, loaded full with one in the chamber, held in his left hand.
What's the time, John?
10:30, son.
They'll hit us in about 10 minutes. Relax, John. Have another cup of coffee. If you don't mind, pour me one while you're at it. I'll keep an eye on the front.
All right.
That man is completely and utterly calm.
John walked to the kitchen. He looked at his daughter. Sally was sitting in a straight-back chair by a kitchen window, her rifle laying across her lap. She looked as though she might decide to take a nap.
Coffee, girls?
Thanks, Father. Yes, if you don't mind.
She was as calm as smoke. But then, John suddenly realized, so was he.
My whole damn town's about to be a war zone. Why hasn't the army been notified?
Wire is down, George. Besides, Mr. Reynolds tried to get in touch with the governor last night. He's on vacation. Tried to get in touch with the commander of that army base over in New York State. He's in Washington, D.C. Relax, George. We'll handle it.
George Mahaffery pulled a dragoon out of his belt, the barrel about as long as his arm. Sheriff Poley looked at the weapon dubiously.
Is that thing loaded, George?
Certainly it's loaded. I carried it in the war.
What war? The French and Indian? Get away from me before you try to fire that thing, George. That thing blow up, it'd tear down half the building.
Hey, Poley, look at those guys.
What guys?
Mr. Longmount and that Arizona Ranger, York. They're just standing out on the sidewalks, big as brass, got their coats pulled back so as they can get at the guns. That York is just as calm as can be, rolling a cigarette.
Hell, the gambler's reading the damn newspaper. They behave as though they're just waiting for a train.
In a way, they are.
What time is it?
About a minute later than the last time you asked.
Hey, I'm just trying to figure out when my town's gonna
Hold
be a...
it. Mr. Longmont just jerked up his head and tossed the paper to the street. He's looking up Maine.
Here they come! And there's a mob of them!
Lewis and York separated, with York ducking behind a horse trough and Lewis stepping back into the shallow protection of a store well. Both had drawn their guns. Ty Medley and his bunch were leading the charge, followed by Studs Woodenhouse and his gang, then Paul Rycroft and Slim Bothwell and their followers. Bringing up the rear were Tustin, LaHogue, Shorty, Red, and Jake. Davidson, Daggett, Lapeer, Moore, and Brute were not in the bunch.
You men on the roof! Fire, goddammit! Fire your rifles!
But the men on the roof held their fire, and both Lewis and York knew why. They hadn't been fired upon. It was the age-old myth of the fair fight. But any realist knows there's no such thing as a fair fight. There's just a winner and a loser.
Damn East Coast!
Good shot!
Lewis went back into the store well and York dropped back behind the horse trough. The outlaws took that time to ride across a block to the bank and toss a giant powder bomb. Before it went off, they charged their horses into an alley. Smoke and dust clouded the street. The outlaws tossed another bomb at the rear of the bank building.
All right, boys, the bank's ours! Shorty, Red, get working on the safe. The rest start shooting up the place.
The suddenness and viciousness of the attack seemed to stun the sheriff, the chief, and the local volunteers. From the positions chosen by the lawmen, there was nothing for them to shoot at. Everything was happening on their side of the street. Lewis was pinned down and fighting alone. Finally, he lost his composure.
Will you yellow-bellied sons of bitches fire your weapons? God damn it!
Of course, the locals weren't cowardly, not at all. Things like this just didn't happen in their town. But Lewis's call did get their attention, which was all he wanted.
Call me a yellow-bellied son of a bitch, will ya?
Before anybody could stop him, George Mahaffery charged from the building and onto the sidewalk. Kneeling down, he cocked a dragoon and squeezed the trigger. The mayor's slug traveled clear through the well and into a hardware store, where it hit the ammunition case and set off several boxes of shotgun shells.
Oh, shit! We're surrounded! Get Paul, Slim, Tustin, take the rear!
The outlaws in the bank began shooting in all directions. George raised to his knees and let bang another round from the dragoon.
What the hell are they shooting at us?
Don't matter, vault's set to blow! You heard him? Everybody, clear out! Everybody clear? It don't matter. We out of town. You blow it, Red!
The force of the giant powder exploding sent half the roof flying off and blew one wall completely down. George Mahaffery ended up in Sheriff Poley's lap. The chief of police found himself sitting on a spittoon. No one really knew how they'd gotten their present positions.
Whoa! Hey, I've got money in that bag!
Well, hell, so do I!
Let's get the bastards!
They all finally opened up.
They just built a bank building, John!
Place needed renovating anyway.
You'll do, John. You'll do.
Smoke saw horses running towards him and jerked up his Henry, easing back the hammer. He recognized Glenn Moore from Dead River. There was no way in hell that man would ever hurt Sally again. Moore grabbed his chest, but he managed to stay in the saddle. He galloped on down the street, turning into a side street. Out of the corner of his eye, Smoke saw Brute Pittman cut in behind the house, galloping across the neatly tended lawn.
Coming up your way, Sally!
Suddenly, the lawn was filled with human scum. The peer flew off his horse, John Reynolds' buckshot tearing into his chest.
Goddamn heathen! Come on, you sunny scum!
Smoke dropped the Henry and jerked out his six guns. Smoke dropped to one knee as splinters flew from the porch. He leveled his .44s at Tustin, the so-called minister. Tustin's preaching days were over. The remaining outlaws thought twice about attacking the family of the most feared gunfighter in all the West.
We've beaten them back!
You stay in the house and keep a sharp lookout, John. Sally! You all right?
I'm fine, honey. Martha and I got led in some big, ugly man. Didn't kill him, though.
Brute Pittman.
Smoke knew his plan to ride into town had to wait now. He couldn't leave this house until Brute was dead and Rex and the others were accounted for. Smoke stepped off the porch and began a careful circling of the house and grounds. Meanwhile, Lewis ended the outlaw career of Studs Woodenhouse. A rifleman from a second floor window brought down two more of Davidson's gang. The remaining outlaws were trapped inside the ruined bank. One tried to make a break for it.
I got it! I got the bastard!
Ty Medley exposed his head once too often, and Sheriff Holden was ready for him. The hog, along with Shorty, Jake, and Red, slipped out through a hole blown in the wall and crept into the hardware store. There, they stuffed their pockets full of cartridges and began chopping a hole in the wall, breaking into a dress shop and then into an apothecary shop. They were far enough away from the bank building then to slip out, locate their horses, and get the hell out of that locale. Smoke turned the corner and came face to face with Brute Pittman at the rear corner of the house. The man's face was streaked with blood, and there was a tiny bullet hole in his left shoulder, put there by Martha's pocket .32. The man's eyes lit up in recognition. Then Smoke turned the lights out. Brute Pittman, with his eyes and mouth open, took with him and forever sealed the secret to his cache of gold. Sally and Martha watched as Smoke grabbed Brute's six guns for himself. He passed by a rear window, blood staining one side of his face.
My goodness, Sally. He looks like he'd stare down the devil himself.
He's had to, Martha, or else he'd have been dead a long time ago.
Lord, I fear I'll never get used to that sound.
I hope you don't, Martha. Smoke?
I got Glenn Moore. Four bullets for the one he gave you.
You hurt bad?
Scratch, that's all. Got any more coffee?
Sure.
Thanks. Ah, good. How's everything here?
We're all fine.
Good to hear.
Smoke carried the cup of coffee with him through the house, stopping by John Reynolds' position in the foyer.
It didn't go as King Rex planned. I got a hunch he and Daggett have turned tail and run.
Then it's over?
For now. But I think I know where the outlaws hold up before they hit us.
Where?
The big house with the huge barn just outside of town.
Well, that's Jennings Miller's place. Yes. Come to think of it, I believe he went to visit one of his children the other day.
When this is over, I'll get the sheriff and we'll take a ride over there. Does Daggett still have kin in this town?
Unfortunately, yes. The Mansfords. A very disagreeable bunch. They live just north of town. Why do you ask?
Probably never be able to prove it.
but I'll bet they helped Daggett out encasing the town and telling them the best place to hide.
I certainly wouldn't put it past them.
I'll wire the marshal's office first thing after the wires are fixed. I'll ask them to give any reward money to the town. I reckon the bank's going to be pretty well tore up. What's so funny, John?
I wouldn't worry about the bank building, son. Like I said, it needed a lot of work done on it anyway.
Bank president and owners might not see it that way, John.
Oh, I can assure you, son, the major stockholder of that bank will see it my way.
Are you the major stockholder, John?
No. My father gave his shares to his favorite granddaughter when she turned 21.
And who is that?
Your wife, Sally.
Only two outlaws were hauled out of the bank building unscathed. Several more were wounded, and one of those would die in the local clinic. Paul Ryecroft and Slim Bothwell had managed to weasel out and couldn't be found. Almost miraculously, no townspeople had been seriously hurt in the wild shooting. Rex Davidson and Daggett, so it appeared, were long gone from the town. The sheriff and his deputy went to the Mansford home and gave it a thorough search, talking with the family members at length. The family was sullen and uncooperative, but the sheriff could not charge anyone. After all, there was no law on the books against being a jackass. The bodies of the dead were hauled off, and the streets swept and cleaned up in front of the ruined bank building. The townspeople began gathering around, pointing at this and that. The sheriff had deputized two dozen extra men and sent them off to guard all roads and paths leading out of the town. People could come in, but you had damn well better be known if you wanted to get out. The telegraph wires were repaired and once more humming. A special train had been ordered from Manchester and Concord, and the small town was rapidly filling up with reporters and photographers. Pictures were taken of Mayor George Mahaffery holding his dragoon, and of the sheriff and his deputy, and of the chief of police and his man. Smoke, Lewis, and York tried to stay out of the spotlight as much as possible. That ended abruptly when a small boy tugged at Smoke's jacket.
Yes, son?
Four men at the end of the street, Mr. Smoke. They said they'll meet you and your men in the street in 15 minutes.
Thanks. Here's a dollar.
Thanks, Mr. Jensen, sir!
Smoke motioned for the sheriff and for Lewis and York.
What can I do for you, Marshal?
Clear the street, Sheriff. Lewis, York, we've been challenged. Four men down a block. 15 minutes.
What? Why, I'll just take a posse and clean them out.
No. You'll walk into an ambush if you try that, Sheriff. None of us knows where the men are holed up. Just clear the street.
Yeah, the showdown ain't against the law where we come from.
Since they had first met, Martha and York had been keeping close company. Martha stepped out of the crowd now and walked to York.
York?
Yes, ma'am?
I'll be waiting.
York blushed furiously, but his grin couldn't have been dislodged with an axe. Sally walked up to her husband.
Well, now she is a right tricky girl. You ever see them doing that before?
I certainly haven't, and definitely not in men's breeches.
I'm thinking she'll be a great Colorado school teacher.
I'm thinking she'll be a great Colorado something.
Well, one more time, friend?
I wish I could say it would be the last time.
Oh, it won't be.
The hundreds of people had moved into stores and ducked into alleyways. Reporters were scribbling as fast as they could, and the photographers were ready behind their bulky equipment.
There they stand.
Shorty, Red, Jake, the Hog.
Smoke glanced up and down the wide street. It was free of people.
You boys ready?
Let's do it.